Welcome to Trends with Benefits, real estate investing with Dale Creed Francis and Ryan Litvin. We strive to bring an open, honest, and transparent approach to real estate investing by informing and educating listeners about the real-world benefits, issues, and challenges investors need to know when it comes to direct participation real estate. This podcast is where you can learn the latest trends, innovations, and opportunities available to help build wealth, create income, and diversify your portfolio. So get ready for another informative, fast-paced, and entertaining episode of Trends with Benefits. Hey, welcome everybody. I'm Dale Creed Francis, along with a special guest today because Ryan Litvin is, we'll call it, on assignment. So we've got a great guest for you, and I want to remind you that the podcast, Trends with Benefits, goes along with the monthly newsletter. They go hand in hand, so you can subscribe to that free newsletter at trendswithbenefitspodcast.com. Just go there, sign up for it. Now, let's get right into this because we have a lot to cover. We plan on doing this as a basically a two-part series. If it runs into three, well, good for everybody because that means there's more content. But we're planning on doing it based off of a really, really intriguing, interesting, and easy-to-read book that I recently went through. And let me introduce you to our guest for this podcast, Jill J. Johnson, MBA. Glad to have you.
I'm so glad to be here, and I'm excited to talk about my book with somebody who's obviously read it. I'm loving all the marks in the book and the highlights and the pen notes.
Yeah, if you guys could only see this, I went through this, and I did what any author wants their book to look, a little ragged after, because I've gone through it, pen in hand, marking up stuff, writing notes, highlighting. I ran through a full highlighter on this book. But I will say that also what it is, Jill, is an easy read, which is not easy to do when you're talking about the book, and its title is Market Forces, Strategic Trends Impacting Senior Living Providers. I mean, at first you think, oh, this is going to be a snooze fest, but it's not at all. I really enjoyed it. I think that I would encourage people to get a copy as well. And so I don't forget, how would you tell people to get a copy of this book?
So you can get copies on Amazon. It's one of the, in the real estate area, depending on, you know, if I do a podcast and the sales spike a little bit, but it's done well and people have really resonated. Reviews always appreciated. But yeah, it's available. You can get it on Amazon or you can go to Barnes & Noble and they should be able to special order it for you as well.
Awesome. Well, let me give a little bit of your background here for our listeners. So Jill Johnson is the president and founder of Johnson Consulting Services. She is Minneapolis-based, yay. Jill helps clients make critical business decisions and develop market-based strategic plans for turnarounds or growth. Her consulting work has influenced more than $4 billion worth of business decisions. Her clients are located throughout the United States as well as Europe and Asia. She has won numerous honors, which is impressive as well. She has also been inducted into two business Hall of Fames, and her business frequently includes the evaluation of complex marketplace dynamics and assisting organizations in assessing the impact of these market forces on their long-range strategic plans, master planning efforts, and new service development. How'd I do?
You did well. You did well. Exactly.
Well, there's more because you're
and there's more.
And there's more. You get this free mop with your National Speakers Association. Awesome. Mm-hmm. 120 magazines you've been published
in. Now over 150.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, since let the book me mark.
Yeah, since the book came out.
Edit your book. Right. Edit that.
University of Minnesota Carlson School of Management.
No.
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 Why?
Drake University.
No, but it talks about your right here.
Oh, I taught at the university.
Yeah. I didn't mention that. You taught at Minnesota's Carlson School of Management, but your master's MBA is from Drake.
Yep.
You know that's one of mine.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That's why we get along so well.
Yeah, we do. It's a great school in Des Moines if you're not aware of it.
Yeah, if your kids need a good business school to think about.
Absolutely.
It's great.
And so that's a bit of your background. Anything there that you'd like to add before I go jump into the introduction of this book?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that's really important for people to understand is I've been working with this sector for almost four decades. I was a child when I started. I was working with one of the big CPA consulting firms. They yep. were one of the 20 largest consulting practices in the world at the time that I worked for them. And they had a national specialty in long-term care, senior housing. And so I cut my teeth there doing, you know, bond offerings and feasibility studies that were being used for financing. And it was just such a great starting ground for understanding this industry. But I was also working on developing the analytical modeling for some of the very first assisted living properties that were ever developed in the U.S. back in the mid-'80s. And
prior to that sort of transitioning, everyone always just knew of nursing homes.
Yeah, there were nursing homes, and there were also some today what we would call the age segregated, not quite active adult, but they were more independent living. And you had a variety of them around the country, not quite in the same layers of sophistication that you might find today. But, you know, there was a gap. And the firm that I worked with was great at identifying gaps in service delivery. And we had some clients that were visionaries and looking at how could we fulfill this need. And so, you know, we were talking back then about assisted living becoming an alternative to the nursing home, which, you know, for a private pay prospect today, that is very true.
Absolutely.
And, and there's a whole bunch of issues associated with that. So I got my start with that. And, you know, it was a deep subspecialty that if you knew me, you knew about it. If you knew my clients, you got referred. That way it was, you know, professionally, I work with exclusively in the services sector, but I just have continued this deep specialty in the long-term care and the housing side, in aging services today, we would call it. But I've been physically in or studied over 3,000 senior living communities across the country.
Wow. You've seen it all.
I have seen
it
all.
Well, probably not, but close to it.
Well, and I've been in places that, you know, I showed and trained and loved Rottweilers for three decades, and I have places that I've been into that I would not take my therapy dog Rots into.
Wow.
I hear you. You know, and things on the other end of the spectrum. I've had a lot of clients that we've worked with for a decade or two decades, so long relationships. So you really get to get in and see the arc of the complexities of operating and managing properties over time. And I've done a lot of turnarounds over the years. And I've had some competitors that we put out of business because that was my goal. Yeah, they're the evil empire.
You shark, you rascal, you.
Yeah, oh, my God. I remember driving out of one site with a client, and it was, you know, it was an $80 million, you know, or $200 million development. And I knew everything about this site. I have ways of getting information, and scary.
It's not to the level of waterboarding, is it?
No.
Oh, okay,
but
good.
Don't ever leave me with a disgruntled ex-staff person for more than a minute. But anyway, and I remember the client and I had gone, and we had had a front door meeting with the marketing person that was at the site, who was a disgruntled employee, which was great. And I kept shooing my client away. I kept shooing my client away because she was interrupting. I'm like, just Kathy, shut up. Because she'll tell us more if you just don't interrupt her.
Yeah.
But as we were driving out, you know, and their site was bordered by, across the street was a cemetery. And, you know, so they were all like, it's an easy step to your next level of care.
Oh my God.
But as we were driving
what
out.
What a sales point.
Oh my God. And, you know, it was an expensive property. It was completely mismatched price-wise to the market. There were just all sorts of issues. And, you know, maybe this will come up in greater detail as we talk. But I turned to my client and I said, Kathy, I am so glad you're my client and not them. I can fix a lot. I can't fix this.
Yeah.
And that particular site filed for bankruptcy about 6 months later. I mean, it was bad. And
it makes sense. I mean, what you're saying. Let's have you tip your mic down just a tad, a little bit more. so we can make sure that you get. Okay, now there. That's a great segue into this introduction to this book because here's what you say. This is a powerful statement right out of the gate. You say the senior living providers who survive and even thrive in this complex environment are those who do not accept status quo. You and I were talking about not accepting status quo before this show, and we always strive to do that at Vincent Companies. And you went on to say, nor do they just hope their economic or marketplace situations will magically keep their communities full. You say that the senior living industry encompasses one of the most complex business operations you will ever encounter.
Correct.
Now I understand that because it's a big part of what we do. We do everything from market rate apartments into 55 plus into assisted living, memory care. But I don't think a lot of the public understands it because I get quotes like this. I'm going to give you a quote, Jill, that someone recently I'm talking to, you asked me what do you guys do? And I explained it, explained the apartments, explained the senior living. And his quote was, whoa, yeah, that's like printing money. And you ever see Jerry Maguire movie, the Show Me the Money? I'd like to say, show me the printer because it's a lot more to it than that, which some aspects of that we appreciate because it also helps keep out marginal providers because you do have to be on your game for and improving everything all the time and never being status quo.
Exactly. And I think, you know, part of the reason I said that is, you know, sometimes, you know, I'll work with a senior provider that's owned by a hospital system, and the hospital systems have a lot of perspective that maybe the retirement housing is a little less than what they do in the acute care world. Right. But it's a much more complex arrangement because in acute care, in a hospital setting, I might have a 5-day relationship with you. Mm-hmm. And most of the time I've got you so drugged up you can't feel or see.
Yeah.
And then you go on your merry way and I don't have a relationship with you. Mm-hmm. I don't really care about what happens to you because I'm on to whoever needs me next.
Yep.
And in retirement housing, what I try and make sure that especially people that are new to the industry understand is that it is a sacred honor to be able to work in this sector.
Absolutely.
Because you are now connecting with people who are on, for the most part, the last maybe decade or the last 6 months of their life, depending on, you know, what part of the continuum you fall in. And you are creating, you have in a typical setting, you have a restaurant, you have dining services. So that's a whole business model. There, you know, so you got all the food stuff, you got all the staffing complexities, you have the service delivery, you've got all the supply chain dynamics that you have dealing with that. And then because most of these providers are offering housekeeping, now you've got a commercial cleaning enterprise. So you're not only cleaning the common areas, but you are in the resident apartments. And so there's a fiduciary relationship of having someone in there. Mm-hmm. And then you've got maintenance and facilities because you're a real estate.
You can't let the grass grow up to be, you know, go to seed.
No, exactly. And you've got to have, you know, ceilings that aren't falling off and in the maintenance of those common areas. And when you look at the size of these developments, they're huge. Right. Even a small property has huge space. And then they've got a fitness center, usually. Mm-hmm. So there's some exercise equipment. Well, if they've got staff in there, they're now running a fitness gym. And then you've got the whole healthcare piece of it. You've got a home health agency. You may have a hospice program. You've got maybe nursing staff. You've got comfort staff. You've got staff who are helping just with CNAs that are carrying around the activities of daily living. And it's not uncommon on these sites to see that they've got a little convenience store. So now you've
correct.
Got
yeah.
all of that.
Yeah.
And what else do they have? They have a beauty
I'm
shop.
Running the slushy machine and the
they've got the beauty shop.
Yes.
And you've got some of them have physical therapy that's
offered
on site that's not just for the residents, it's for outside. So you begin to start to see the complexity of the multiple layers of business units that you're operating. And it's all wrapped up in the framework of And we have programs. So we have programming and activities. Some have a movie theater. So now you're running one of those as well. You got to pick the right movies or people are going to yell at you about that. And you're dealing with people who aren't always at their best.
Yes.
Because, you know, sometimes bitching can be a hobby. And sometimes it's they just don't feel well. And so it just, it's all complex.
You're going into the elder mean girl group topic there, aren't you? We'll hit on that later.
Yeah,
but when I read that in your book, I'm like, oh yeah, because you're like they're worse than than kids.
They're worse than high school.
Okay, so now we've got that. It's not a money printing machine, although that if you do things right.
Yeah.
It can be a nicely profitable business.
Absolutely.
Now, let's move to a topic that Ryan and I have done multiple shows on and talked to people about, and that is what is the senior tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about that population that's emerging, which will create these ongoing pressures for the industry and the need for the services.
So I think about it in the terms right now of, I would call it three generations.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the GI generation, which were the folks that fought in and were adults during World War II.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were, you know, young adults during the Great Depression. So they had very specific life experiences. They had attitudes towards money, work. They were satisfied with whatever you gave them.
Yeah.
They did not, they
appreciated
were demanding,
because
they were grateful to be able to have.
Yep.
And so we're pretty much at the end of having served that GI generation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We're now serving primarily the silent generation, which are the GI generation's children. And so they came up in, you know, they might have, you know, had family members that were off fighting in World War II, but they were a little on the younger side.
Sure.
But those folks are now in their mid-80s to 90s now.
I was just going to ask, because give us a bracket there. So mid-80s to early 90s is right in there?
Of the ones that are still alive. Yeah, that would be
correct.
That would be kind of where we're at.
Okay, sure.
But when people are talking about the senior tsunami, they're really talking about the next generation, which is the baby boomers.
Right.
And the reality is are there an extraordinary number of baby boomers coming? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But there are complexities that touch the senior housing sector about, you know, folks, even the silent generations, they're much more aware of how food and nutrition and exercise enhance their lifespan and their quality of life and their health span. So, and then you've got baby boomers who are, you know, looking at, and there's the other side of the coin with America's obese and all of that. But there's kind of like this two different groupings, if you will, that we're looking at serving. But it's changed the delivery of what kind of services are offered. And so, you know, you need something more stimulating, even an active adult. I mean, I think there are segments in active adult where there are older adults who need assistance with certain areas of care, but the programming is so god awful boring that it's mind numbing. It's
mm-hmm.
not activity stimulating.
Yeah, it's not, it just doesn't get. It doesn't really approach the goal that you would hope that it does, because it's just like you said it best, mind numbing. I mean,
well,
apparently I have some of it.
You
I don't know. I'm stumbling
numbing.
Here. No, but I was looking for the word, but I mean, yeah, you're trying to do the opposite of that. You should be.
Well, and it's to the convenience of staff, and the
mm-hmm.
staff are so overworked and so pressured right now because it's so difficult to find staff, and most of the staff are the younger generation. So now you're looking at young baby boomers, you know, people who are in their early to mid 60s that are working in these sites. You've got the Gen Xers
mm-hmm.
who are, you know, in their 40s and 50s. You've got the millennials who, you know, everybody's had a lot of feedback about millennials, but, you know, they're now moving further into their professional careers.
Absolutely.
And we've got Gen Zs that are now coming in and working in our environment. So you could have five to six generations interacting in a senior living environment. And but the way it ties out to the senior tsunami is that there is just this big bubble of baby boomers that are aging now. And some of them are, you know, in their 80s, and some of them are in their almost mid 60s. So the bubble is going to continue over time. But the problem is that all of this building and all of the development and all of the energy is about, we've got to get ready for the senior tsunami and this would build there now.
They're all going to be lining up outside the door, waiting, pounding on it to get in.
Probably not until they're 85. And that's, no, unless
exactly.
It's
I was being facetious because that is the image I think in a lot of conversations out there, and it does lead right to this chapter one in your book is the strategic impact of market forces. Mm-hmm. You say there's 9 market forces significantly impacting the senior living industry. We're talking about one right here, demographics.
Demographics
is one of 9, mm-hmm. And that's what you've been talking about. I didn't want to interrupt you there because you got right into that group of people that is it's a huge segment. But why aren't they going to be just pounding down the door to get in?
Because a lot of them won't be able to afford it.
Right.
So let's be realistic.
Yep. Got to be realistic.
The GI generation, they saved their pennies.
Yeah.
Most of them were under the bed. You know, they weren't earning interest on
right.
it, but they still had
they
it.
And
they had pension money.
Yes.
And then, you know, they're a little bit of Social Security. So, they weren't necessarily well off, but they were fiscally conservative. The silent generation has been a lot stupider. And I don't mean to insult any of your listeners, but they've been less than mindful about their money. And a lot of it is because they are paying for things that are to the benefit of their children and grandchildren. So, for example, when we had the recession in the late 2000, 9, 10, 11-ish, they were paying the expenses for their adult children and grandchildren. They were paying the house payments. They were paying credit card bills. They were running up credit card bills of their own.
Uh-huh.
They were co-signing loans for kids to go to college, and the adult children were, not making the payments on their college tuition that grandma and grandpa thought they would do because, well, grandma's going to pay for it. And so they have spent a lot of their nest egg, and they've got mortgage debt now. I mean, we look at different stats and data, and the last time I looked at it was, like a quarter to almost a third of households age 75 and above have mortgage debt.
Yeah.
You didn't see that at all with the GI generation.
No, that was unheard of.
And what you also didn't see was them not honoring the debts that they had. I've had competitors when I'm doing market studies, we're often doing site tours and competitor tours and things like that. And I was doing a competitor tour in a rural market, but not, it was about a 20,000 person community. And the woman broke down, the executive director for the nursing home that was across, a competitor. And she broke down because she said, we've got people living here whose kids are managing their money, and they're not paying the bills because they're hoping mom dies soon, and they don't want all, because it's expensive to be in a nursing home.
Yeah,
let's
it
be
is.
Honest.
Of course it is.
And,
yes.
And you're not in a nursing home unless you really need 24-hour custodial care. And so when you're running up a debt like that and you're not paying the bill to honor your parents, now all of a sudden these people are talking about they've got to get attorneys from the metro area to come and file lawsuits because the local attorneys won't do it. So you've got this community dynamic at play. And, and then there's a whole group of adult children, primarily baby boomers and their grandchildren, that have taken advantage of grandma and grandpa. They've manipulated them out of certain monies and assets. And, or they'll talk them out of making a move. I had that happen. I was talking to some people in Kentucky, and, they were kind of a mid-market, not super high price, but they were getting prospects that prospect wanted to move in.
Yes.
But the adult kids said no because they were living with mom. And if mom wasn't paying for the house payment, they would have to cough up their own money to do it, and that would change their lifestyle and the other things. So there's a lot of inner the complexity at play, and so you really have to understand not just, you know, the number of people at certain ages, but then you have to also understand the financial impact. And one last thing about the demographic dynamic of age, the reality is that people don't move into these sites typically. The market studies, we all do them on 75 and above, because I can make almost anything work if I stretch the geography boundary out a little further.
Of course. And we have that, but Jen, you just, what's the saying? The worst lies in life are the ones we tell ourselves.
Exactly.
So we don't want to do that.
Well,
but
it's the industry standard for financing.
I know.
So what ends up happening is, you know, everybody's using this younger age group, but they don't move in. They move in when they're close to 84, 85, 86.
Correct.
If it's assisted living, it's 85 to 87.
Mm-hmm.
And active adult, you can tip younger. You can get them probably closer to 70 to 75, and then they stay for 10 years. So it's a one-time sale versus in a straight multifamily housing dynamic. You're having to maybe rent that apartment every year, you know, as you've had very transient people that are living there. So there's complexities on each end of the dynamic of what type of housing or what kind of senior space are you entering into, and then what do they need for care and support, and what services are you going to offer, and, you know, are you really going to be able to provide it? And we've got clients that they're in a market where there is room, there's enough, you know, mathematically there are enough people, but they can't get enough staff to staff the beds or the units that they have. So they've got areas of the building that are closed off and shut down and will probably be turned back over because financially they can't make it go.
Okay, market force, another one. Generational differences, you know, sort of touched on some of these, but if each generation has a slightly different approach to problem solving. That's the line I highlighted in this. Solve that for me, will you, Jill?
Yeah, really. It's like,
I'm having a problem with this problem.
Well, you know, I think their attitudes are, you know, the who's going to take care of me? Who's going to decide? And there's a growing portion of younger elderly that just assume the government will take care of them.
Oh, yeah.
And I like to tell people, you want to manage your retirement assets for that last decade or more of life in such a way that you have choice. Because people who have financial resources are going to be able to get the services that they want at a caliber and quality that is worthy of them. And it's people who don't have the resources, or it's, you know, siphoned off from them by, you know, bad actors or their kids.
Might be one and the same.
There's a special place in hell for those folk.
Yeah.
You have choice, and your decisions about what you do and how you manage your quality of life in that last decade or last 15 years is going to be an absolute consequence of the choices that you're making and the decisions that you're making about who you trust as advisors, who you trust with your resources, who you trust to be in that influencer group with you. And if you're talking to somebody, you know, I get calls all the time from people who, you know, I'm looking for a place for my mom. I'm like, well, that's really not what we do. But you can tell they have no clue. They don't even know the multiple levels of care that they could consider. Well, mom needs assisted living. Well, then you talk to them, it's like, no, your mom needs a place where she can get one meal a day, access to transportation, and some fun. She doesn't need assisted living. And, and the price point
huge confusion in the marketplace.
Yeah, the price point's very different. You're going to double your cost.
Well, yeah, and I can understand why there is. And in the industry, a lot of, you know, we could even call them leaders, still have not been clear enough on that, like, so to help the public understand what's going on at these places.
And a lot of it is there's not an interest in doing that because they're just hoping that their marketing team will get calls from everybody and then they'll just sift through. And
good point.
They're looking, you know, for numbers. But, you know, what's really sad, too, is you look at the reality of, you know, the finances, choices, and decisions is, you know, I was in a property. It was very low end. Oh, my gosh. It was you know, the residents were sharing rooms. They had shared bathrooms.
Okay.
The staff had kind, loving hearts. I mean, it was...
They usually do.
It was a secret shop, so I really hated lying to these people because they were so kind. But the reality was is that their best source of residents were from a couple of the really upscale for-profit developments that were charging lots and lots of money. But as soon as the resident ran out of money, they got booted out, and they went from Taj Mahal to, you know, to the other side. And so as I watched all these residents, you know, being parked in their wheelchairs outside the dining area, and it was just a line of people.
I've seen that before.
My heart just broke, because these are people who lost the choice of that. And the other thing that I tell older adults when I talk to this is, look, I know you don't want to leave the house you've lived in for 40 or 50 years.
Yeah.
But the house that you're living in right now was not constructed for somebody who has any problem moving around the house, that has any problem going up and down the stairs, or has, you know, any issues with a bathroom that was built in the 1950s that you can't, you know, get in and turn around in. And are you going to make choices about where and decisions about where you're going to live and who's going to assist you, or are you going to defer that and leave that up to your kids? And when you look at the array of pricing alternatives for senior housing, so you've got rental communities. In Minnesota here, we have the cooperative dynamic. So you've got a little, that's very unique to Minnesota.
Yep.
And then you have entrance fee communities. And then you have life care communities where they say they'll take care of you till the end of life. Part of the things that we see in some of these other really higher end with upfront fee properties is that these are planners. These are people who, they want to be in control. They want to make their own decisions. They want to know exactly where they're going to live, and they're going to move in before, you know, their health requires them to, because the worst time to make decisions is when you're in the throes of a crisis. Then it's going to be whoever's got an open room, who's ever got an empty bed. And trust me, those kind of decisions don't always work out to the best advantage for the older adult or for the family.
That falls into our philosophy of Ryan in my book, Preventative Wealth Care. It's the same thing. Prevent, you know, you're talking about, everyone knows you should do what you can to prevent health issues before they happen, rather than you get into this horrible situation. Happens same with your money.
Exactly.
You get into the throes of the, you know, when you have to do something, change something, fix something, and then there's panic, you make wrong decisions sometimes. It's like, do as much as you can before to prevent it. Now, I know that that's not human nature. It's not what our society teaches people to do. It's why so many people don't think about making a will until maybe too late, because you don't want to think about that. I think these living arrangements can be part of that, that people just deny it until they absolutely have to do something about it.
And absolutely. And you get these adult children who, you know, you've got the son who lives out in California.
That's
the outlaw who swoops in. Well, I know everything about what's going on with mom. And you've got the daughter who's living, you know, and every day taking care of some element for mom. And the brother is saying, she doesn't need help. And the daughter is going, if I don't get help, you know, my health is at stake. And so there's so many layers of complexity. And that, when we get back to that part we were talking about earlier, why is this such a complex business? Because you're dealing with the social dynamic of the complexities of not only the resident and their health care and their aging brain and all of that, but you're dealing with their family and the family unit that they created.
That's right.
Or didn't create.
Or didn't.
And now you've got all of these things battling, and your teams are trying to dance through the raindrops to figure out exactly how to best serve, and is this the right fit? Do we offer the kind of programming that would be of appeal? And so the whole psychological, psychographic component for the resident, the staff, the family, I mean, all of those have to be really well coordinated. And, you know, you really can only tell that if you've taken the time to study and visit when you're not in the throes of a crisis. I'll never forget. It was brought so home to me. Years ago, I was doing a focus group for, you know, one of the really big multi-site, top five multi-site providers. And I was doing a focus group, and one of the ladies said to me, you know, I have been coming here for over 10 years to visit friends who live here. And so I've been in a lot of different apartments, and I already knew exactly which style of apartment I was going to get and how I would have my furniture laid out before I ever told anyone on staff I was thinking about moving in. And I thought, wow, that is such a powerful thing. So when I'm talking with marketing teams, I'm encouraging them to have activities and events where residents can bring friends to come and visit, or come for cards, or come for the movie theater, or come for, you know, the special lunch or whatever, because it's a showcase and it's a low stress opportunity for a prospect to see, gee, just wow, this is it. I'll never forget, I was taking my aunt, we were looking for a place for her, and she had a lot of issues with walking and ambulating. And I looked at 20 places for Auntie Gert, because it just, there was a lot of dynamic there. And I'll never forget, I found this, I found a building, and you know, I'd already toured it, and it was big. So when I got there, I said, Gert, here's the deal. You are sitting in a wheelchair while we do this tour. Oh, I can walk. I said, that's not the issue. The issue is I don't want you expending all that physical energy on that. I want you to spend your physical energy taking in what you see. So we're going through the building, and we're showing her all the different common areas and activity rooms and where they play bingo and all of that. And we get up into the hair salon, and somebody goes, Gertrude. And she looks, and it was a lady from the old neighborhood.
Oh, my goodness.
Whose sister lived there. And so all of a sudden now Gert realizes that she knows people here, and that these are people like her who are living here. And I made a deposit for her that day.
Well, so that's awesome. Yeah, it took care of some of the unknowns, right? And all of a sudden, oh, I could hang out here with some people I know.
Exactly.
Market forces, back to that, competitors.
Yes.
Your competition is changing your staff and consumers' expectations.
Yes.
Go into that a little bit. What do you mean?
Well, so what often happens is, you know, let's say you're the sole provider in a market, or there's only a handful of competitors, and you know, you've been around for 20 years, and you kind of get a little complacent. Yeah. You get complacent about your physical plant. You get complacent about staff development training, and, you know, you're still offering kind of the same meal service because, you know, Susie, who's the kitchen, the head of culinary services, has been with you for forever, and things are same old status quo. Mm-hmm. But when a new competitor comes into the market, they alter things.
Mm-hmm.
They start changing the expectations of what buildings should look like, what programming should look like, what food service ought to look like, what the carpet and the floor ought to look like, and the furniture. And all of a sudden, you now become very different. I had a client in Chicago a number of years ago, and it was the flagship for a large multi-site. And it had been around since the early 60s, was a full continuum property, very well regarded. But I had some pretty hard things I had to say to the staff, because I had toured all the new competitors, you know, the new Hyatt, and there were some other really upscale properties that come in. And my client viewed themselves as an upscale market facility, and they no longer were. And I remember being in the staff meeting, and, you know, I'm sharing the rather hard news, and I said, you know, you're going to have to probably tear down your commons area and rebuild, because I don't think you can retrofit it to make it work. And they were offended as all get out that I would suggest such a thing. And I said, look, you know, have any of you been in X, Y, and Z, the new properties? And none of them had. I said, they've got a spa. It's not a hair salon. It's a spa. They have a full complement of spa services, resources, and all of the rest of it. And they have a fitness center that is got, you know, equipment that is specially designed for older adults. It's beautiful. It's inviting, and it's whatever. And one of them says, well, you know, we have the YMCA that's on the corner of our property, and we have an arrangement with them. And I just said, all right, 55-acre property. When was the last time any of you were in the Y? And they all looked at me. I said, well, I was there. Let me tell you what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I said, there is a crack in the swimming pool that goes from one end of the pool to the other. The lockers are original to the building from 1960. And it's not, there's nothing about it that's appealing for an older adult. And, oh, by the way, it's not attached to your building. So in the middle of the Midwest winter, I've got to get out or take the bus and get over there and risk the ice and all the rest of it. I said, you have to understand, your competitors have redefined you to a middle market property. And everybody is gasping. They can't believe I have spoken these evil words out loud.
Yeah, nobody wants to hear the truth, huh?
But to their everlasting credit, that is why they hired me, because they did want the truth.
Well, in the end, you have to open your mind up to the truth, or you're just going to stay the status quo.
I will often stay on a client's site. So I'll stay in the guest apartment or the guest room. And I came in with a different site, but it was the same system. And I said, look, you have to understand the TV that's got the black lines across it, that I, you know, in the gray snow, mm-hmm. Is older than almost all of the staff that work here. And they didn't believe me. And then somebody went in and checked it. And I had a new TV by the time I got back from site visits. Or the other client where they were using all this mismatched old furniture for their furnishing of their guest apartment and the rotary phone. And so the board, as a joke, after lots of work and millions of dollars in renovation later, they gave me a photograph of that phone to remember them by. And I'm still working with them. But it's things like that people don't see and understand, that there are layers of perspective about how your competitors position to you. But I've also been in some old buildings that were not glamorous, but had a heart. And you could tell the minute you walked in that the staff team was resonating with the residents, and the residents themselves had a caring and compassion for each other. They had created a sense of community, mm-hmm. and they were reasonably priced. They were priced relative to the fact that they didn't have, you know, this grand building. And I've been in buildings that were so spectacularly beautiful and had absolutely no heart, and I wouldn't have taken my mother to any of them.
Yeah.
And so you really have kind of this mix. And so the challenge for developers and operators is to really find that balance of where do you fit in the market? What is it you really want to do and offer? And then how do you use that strategy to defend against others that might come in the market? And so, you know, if you are going to be, you know, the provider of choice, what does that mean to the people that you're mm-hmm. trying to market to? What does that mean to their adult children? And then there's got to be a really good sync all the way across, from your service delivery teams to your physical plant and maintenance to the programming services delivery to your dining hall and your dining staff to your caregiving staff. All of that has to work together. And that requires a really artful executive director or management team that understands how you do that. And, oh, by the way, then how do you make money delivering all of those resources and services in a fiscally astute manner, and that creates the return on investment for the investors, whether it be, you know, a not-for-profit enterprise that's made this investment or an individual investor who's been part of a group that pools their money together and in a development fund. And I think that it's that attention to the detail and the attention to perspective is what serves people well.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. I think that's a huge, huge piece. Next market force here is always a great fun topic, and it's not always changing, and that's governmental influences.
Oh, Lord.
And so you say, for those of you serving higher care residents, you likely now face daily challenges due to reduced health care reimbursements and the impact of expanded regulations. Well, the regulations continue. Mm-hmm. There is some change going on with the assisted, with the pay levels. But go ahead and talk about what you know and where things are at with that right now.
Well, you know, so Market Forces, this book was originally released in 2019, just prior to COVID hitting. And so I'm loving how, you know, it's still relevant.
Yeah,
today.
It sure is.
I mean, it's a very evergreen book. It just doesn't mention the C word anywhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you think about this industry, and it should be regulated. It should be mm-hmm. because of the fiduciary responsibility and the provision.
Yeah, yes, exactly. No doubt about it.
I have no problem with that idea.
Me
but
either.
There are lots of layers of government involvement and regulation in this industry that go well beyond provision of care. And so it's, you know, for example, the city of Minneapolis with some of the staffing restrictions that they were going to have. Mm-hmm. And they had, you know, at one point they were doing some, I believe it was they were looking at, you know, you couldn't change an employee's shift with unless it was 28 days ahead of time.
Uh-huh.
Like,
yeah.
Who knows how many people you're going to have in.
Exactly.
And so, you know, there are these well-meaning and well-intentioned ideas that often come from people who don't understand what this industry is or how much it costs to deliver, to fulfill the mandates that they may have on, you know, we've seen other states where they've had the states come in and tried to mandate staffing ratios.
Right.
Well, that doesn't work in every little market. So, you know, you've got those dynamics. During COVID, my God, every day there was a new layer of mandate that was coming from the feds, coming from the state agencies. And to their everlasting credit, it was the associations that really provided that access point and the interpretation of all of the sometimes conflicting rules that were coming through.
Conflicting is right. And like you say, interpretation of that was key
time. Well, because staff in buildings were trying to make sure meals got delivered and cares were done and meds were dispensed and diapers were changed and, you know, just the residents were safe and clean. And so, you know, they didn't have the dedicated resources to be able to interpret to stay on top of all of that. And so that's where I really feel, and I worked with a lot of the associations that work in this sector. They really stepped into the fray and showed their true benefit and value, because a provider who wasn't part of that had to figure out all of that on their
mm-hmm.
own
mm-hmm.
or run the risk of, you know, issues and mandates. The other thing is reimbursement. You know, it's a nice theory to get government reimbursement mm-hmm. for Medicare or Medicaid,
right.
But the reality is those reimbursements do not cover the cost of care.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you have this little thing called cost shifting. So the private pay lady is truthfully paying more than she would really have to pay, because they've brought in residents who are on a subsidized level of care. And for those of you that think, you know, oh, well, government payment and it's all going to take care of us, that's going to be great and whatever. I've been in properties that have been predominantly Medicaid. And those are the properties that I would not bring the Rottweilers that I trained and loved for 30 years into as therapy dogs, because they were just not at all what you would want for your loved one.
No.
And so, again, it gets back to the you have no choice if you're relying on those programs. The other thing that we're seeing is, you know, there's been this influx of Medicare Advantage. So for mm-hmm. reimbursements, you know, and that they're coordinating with CMS and all of the other major federal agencies as they're looking at care mm-hmm. and care delivery. And then you have the regular Medicare. Well, you know, we're starting to see more and more Medicare Advantage penetration in markets. Mm-hmm. They don't cover all the things that people mm-hmm. assume and thought they were going to cover. And so now you're getting family members that are getting discharged from the hospital much sooner because some AI model in the care plan says that you should be ambulating by yourself, and mom can't even get up out of the bed. But so then you're having to private pay for a step down unit or care services in the home and things like that that aren't being compensated or covered. So there's so much complexity in all of that that, you know, it gets into layers of overwhelm, and folks are supposed to stay on top of all of that and all the different cares and all the how am I going to get staff in and mm-hmm. oh geez, there's all these other things going on too. So it's for any of your listeners that have care teams that are, you know, you, if you're an existing operator or, you know, even part of your development group, you know, those folks need to be thanked, because what they're doing and staying in the game for you is long term. It's a game changer for you as an investor.
Agreed. This is one of my favorite market topics here.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
technology.
Oh.
And again, this was before COVID really hit the industry or hit everybody. Emerging technologies may alter how the chronic diseases of older adults are monitored and managed. Technologies being used for all kinds of things, not even just the chronic diseases, but talk about some of them that we're seeing. I mean, the technology space is moving quickly, and we've been excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many layers to technology, and we may have to go in a little deeper dive on this in our next segment.
Yeah, we sure could.
But you know, when you think about the whole, like Fitbits, for example, you know, your Apple Watch. I mean, the possibilities of how that can be integrated in care management over a long term. I mean, I have envisioned someday that, you know, I'm a nurse in, RN managing a 60-unit building, and every one of my residents has a Fitbit or an Apple Watch. And so I've got, you know, pulse ox, I've got their pulse rates, I know whose glucose is what, I've got all of these different readings, and the technology is alerting me that Mrs. Jones in room 204, there's something going on with her. And so as a staff, I can go down and do direct intervention.
Yeah.
They're doing the same thing with sensor technology. And, you know, and again, different parts of the country, different things have caught on in different layers. But sensor tech has been around for, you know, 10, 15 years. And the whole idea there is they're looking at how can they use this AI technology to assess that Mrs. Jones is ambulating and moving differently, or she's been in the bathroom for 3 hours. And so, you know, then alerts can go off to staff. So there's interventions, or they can tell when Mrs. Jones has fallen to the floor and can't get up and she's not able to push her button or watch her pendant.
Sounds like a commercial.
It does. And
where have I heard that before?
But, and then you take that and you go even further. You know, there are going to be tools and resources and technology that allow, I've been telling this story for years, you know, well before COVID. You remember that Sigourney Weaver movie, one of the Alien movies, where she's taking care of the little girl, and, you know, she's been, in the beginning of the movie, she's working in the cargo bay with this hydraulic unit that she's in.
Yeah, I know that movie.
So I've been using that picture in speeches since probably 2005.
Uh-huh.
There will be a day when your staff will be able to have that kind of device that will allow them to lift a 250-pound resident with one staff member instead of a 2 or 3 person transfer, that will allow that resident to stay in your assisted living building longer because she can be safely cared for here in this building that you own and run and operate, and you get the cash and the cash flow off of that. But it's becoming a reality now, but it's in different industries. It hasn't fully transitioned over to this one.
Yeah.
So you look at the airline industry, for example, they are using these exoskeleton devices that they're looking at. I can lift this 250 or 200 pound suitcase and lift and move it. And it's just me, Joe, the worker guy, but I've got this exoskeleton device that's giving me superhuman strength so that I can safely do and lift and all of that. Then you've got the whole autonomous vehicles and autonomous devices. So you've got everything from survey robots that are doing food service delivery from the kitchen to where the wait staff are in the dining area. You've got autonomous lawnmowers that, you know, they've been using on golf courses for years. Now your facility guy, if he can map out the you know, your 500-acre or your 150-acre site, you can get your site mode without 15 staff people that you need. And you know, we're starting to see interest now in looking at robotic floor cleaning, at least for the common areas, because then that frees up your what limited housekeeping staff you can find.
Yeah.
They're now in resident apartments and they're resident facing. And so there's all these different elements of going on. But we're going to see that as it allows residents to stay in place longer.
So it makes sense.
So you might have your RN might set up a pillbox for a resident for a week. And the pillbox is set up for the pills to dispense.
Yeah.
And maybe Miss Jones is on a Zoom screen down in the nurse's office on the other end of the campus, and she's watching Mrs. Jones take her pills out of the device, and Mrs. Jones has her water, and she's taking the pills while she's drinking. She shows her, you know, maybe you need to see, did she really take them? Sure. And you know, but then the RN doesn't have to leave that office to run around the site, and so she can do all her pill supervision in a very short amount of time. There's endless possibilities of what it will do, and then the whole AI thing is just has yet to be determined.
And I think, like you said, I think technology will come up in this discussion as we go on into our other segments. But question for you, Jill. Yes. So do you get accused of utilizing an exoskeleton ever because of your superhuman strength?
I do not.
Okay.
But what it will do is it will probably make somebody who, you know, because every senior living community's got these you know, the wheelchairs with the electric car.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
right.
And so you come for dinner and there's the walkers are all lined up and the scooters are all lined up. But there will be a day where, you know, my caregiving staff will come in and strap me into my exoskeleton.
Sure.
And I'll be able to walk the campus and my ability to ambulate and participate won't be reliant on staff.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe I won't have to go to assisted living because I can stay longer and independent.
Right.
And there's the possibilities are really exciting. And, you know, I get calls from tech companies periodically that are starting to explore what they can do and app developers that are looking for opportunities for how they can expand on those things. And so, you know, and there's apps for reimbursement that, you know, will help a facility, you know, do all the coding. I mean, every time they change the coding on these healthcare things, it gets more complicated. And so you got to know exactly what you're doing in order to be able to get the billing systems right. And so it is a very complex industry that is surrounded with heart and care and compassion and walking a journey that, again, may be a 10 or 15-year journey, but you are now walking that final journey of a resident. I'll never forget, I was down in Florida on a site, and I was going to meet the executive director. I'd never met him. And, you know, I'm walking, you know, to the main building from the apartment that I was staying in, and this guy comes, you know, kind of moving at a pretty clip pace. He goes, "Are you Johnson?" I'm like, "Yeah." And he's like, "I'm Oster. We just had a resident die. I'll see you later." And that was the guy I was supposed to meet.
Oh.
And so, he had to go deal with the realities of a resident passing.
Yeah.
And, you know, to see that journey and to know these staff are often, you know, holding the hand of residents or seeing the hospice caregiver who is being gentle into the actively dying older adult, like I saw with my mother-in-law. There is such a specialness to what this industry does and provides and the value. And so on the one hand, yes, we can make lots of money at it, and there's money to be made in a variety of different niches within that space. But at its heart, at its core, at its most impactful, it's about that journey that they go on with that individual.
Yeah.
And their family.
Right. So I'm a dad, so I do dad jokes. And so something you said reminded me of this. What did the horse say when it fell down?
I have no idea.
"Help, I've fallen and I can't giddy up."
Oh, Lord.
Oh, Lord. That's what I did. What a response.
Oh, man. You didn't say it was a good joke.
No, I didn't say it. I've said it was a dad joke. I warned you. Okay, let's continue on here with another topic, and then I think we'll probably take a break at that point, and we'll come back to our part two of the series. But, again, you can get this book if you want to get in more detail on all these topics that we're talking about. But let's go into this one. Operating in a VUCA world.
Otherwise known as VUCA.
Yeah, VUCA. Operating in a VUCA world. And that stands for volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. Yes.
Yes, I know my material.
You know your book. Well, it's amazing. There are two things two other things driving change in senior living. The first driver is referred to as predetermined events. These events are inevitable. They are the circumstances we know or could know with a little effort. Makes sense.
Right. That's right. Things like the demographic shifts and you know, I heard a new competitor is coming into town, and now I can start anticipating for a year or two before, while they're still getting their approvals with the city, I can start thinking about and researching them and looking at their program and looking at their other buildings and how do they operate. And so those predetermined things, things that you know are the knowns that are going to happen. And you know you're going to have residents die, so you're going to have to always be marketing.
Yep.
You're going to have to always be building those relationships with key referral sources, things like that. And a lot of providers, the ones that call because they're in trouble, you know, when I start doing the deep dive, they've gotten careless. They've gotten complacent. They've stopped returning phone calls. They've stopped doing community outreach because they're full. But you're not always going to be full. You're one flu away or one COVID away from needing to refill your building.
Yes.
And so, you know, those are the knowns. You know you're going to have staff turnover. So how can you quickly ramp up your team members and get them trained and educated and transitioned? I was talking with somebody from Michigan who has a really robust program of hiring immigrants from Nicaragua. And one of the complaints that they're having is that all of the software that is used on these sites is English only. And so there's no Spanish variation within the system to help them more rapidly code and do the things that they need to do. And so it's like, okay, if you know that you're going to have staffing issues, you can't just wait till you have a staffing issue. So those would be some of the predetermined.
And those, I think people can understand. You'd have a much more, you know, common sense feel for those. The second driver might be a little bit more difficult. It's the second driver of change is referred to as critical uncertainties. These are the issues that are unpredictable while still remaining a matter of choice in how you deal with them or in how they will evolve within your marketplace.
Man, you really did read the book. This is pretty impressive.
I sure did. That's
red and underlined, circled,
highlighted marked, and dog-eared.
It's starred. You know, I think it really gets to the black swan dynamics.
We love talking about black swans because the impacts so much and so significantly, but those are things you just you don't see coming.
So, you know, COVID obviously is the biggest black swan any of us will ever in this industry deal with. It had ramifications that permeated every aspect of service and delivery and the experience of care of older adults. But, you know, we had that recession back in the mid to late 2000s.
Yeah.
And then there was the catastrophe of September 11, 2001.
Right.
And not necessarily that event directly, you know, the towers falling impacted a provider here in Minnesota, but it had a catastrophic effect on the economy.
Yes, it sure did.
And so when older adults get scared that they're going to run out of money, what do? They stay put.
Yeah.
And they make do. They might rely more on their kids, whether their kids want it or not. They'll rely on, you know, strangers to help them in ways that maybe aren't as healthy. And so all of those things have ramifications. And the other part of it is the financial impacts. You know, people like to think that things are going to be good and go really well, but a lot of them don't have their rainy day funds really set aside.
Oh.
They spend it and then wonder, now what are we going to do? And, you know, I predict in the book, you know, that we're going to probably see, and I predicted this in 2019, that about 25% are going to do really, really well.
Right.
Another 25% are going to do okay. 25% are going to be really struggling, and we're going to lose about 25% of the providers. And I think we're well into some of that now.
I mean, I agree.
The folks that are limping along and they're putting on a pretty face to the public, but they are scrambling. And if it hadn't been for the economic impact, the economic monies that were provided, you know, to keep some of these businesses mm-hmm. in place, they would have closed 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think some of them are hanging on by barely a thread. So then what happens is when you've got providers that close, especially in rural markets or, yeah. or semi-urban markets, you know, third tier, you know, not in the inner city, not in the affluent suburbs, what's going to happen to those older adults? Who's going to provide right. those levels of care? Who's going to provide the safety net for them, you know, if their kids aren't ready, willing, or able to do that? And so that's the critical unknown. We don't understand how, as all of this plays out, what the consequences will ultimately be. And so, you know, what I encourage people to do is save your pennies for those rainy days. You're going to have to be creative about how you do some of the things that you want to do. And maybe you have to start collaborating a little bit on some of your programming or some of the other things to create opportunities for something of greater interest. And it may be, I had a client out in Seattle that was, you know, they're getting ready to open an assisted living building, and they've got a relatively new independent building. And there's a lot of activity out in that market. So just trying to break through the chatter.
Yeah.
So we came up, they called and they said, you know, we'd like you to do some kind of a speech for us. And we know you normally are, you know, talking business topics, but you know, my personal hobbies are genealogy. That's one of the many that I do. And so that gets into all sorts of things. Yeah. And it resonates with older
adults. Yeah,
yeah, as well.
I love that.
And they said, could you do something on that? Because we'd like to just do something different than a presentation on how to downsize or mm-hmm. things like that. And so we created a program called Memories to Memoirs. And it was so it was targeted towards their affluent upscale prospect who is looking at, you know, they've lived a life of rich experiences, and how do you take those experiences
right.
and create them to share memories
right.
with your family. And then I was able to talk about like multi-generational impact. So not just looking at it as being a book you write, looking at how you do, you know, let them videotape you, let them audio tape you, you know, creating different pictures and using your pictures as a way to tell the story, and, you know, working with your young kids. So now you've got some intergenerational dynamic. It was great. But the best part was it wasn't as much about how many people showed up for we did it as a viewing party.
Sure.
But what it was is it allowed them to talk to key referral sources about their building, that they wanted to share this free event that was coming up. So if they had people that were doing it, but it gave them an access point to people who wouldn't have given them the time of day to come in, because if they just said, hey, we want you to refer people to our building
right.
when it opens,
yeah.
and, you know, we're really great people, so
yeah.
send your folks over. It engaged these people who are also dealing with older adults in a very different and very unique way. And so yeah. it created some really unique pathways for them. And that's the thing, is we need to be more clever as we move forward and finding things that resonate in that spectrum of interest with those people that we're trying to ultimately sell to, but in ways that resonate in much, much deeper ways. And, you know, one of these days I'll do my genealogy program for some of the clients.
Cause yeah.
I promised my mother on her deathbed I would find all the villages our family came from and take her in my heart to each of them.
Aww.
And I did. It took 5 years of
wow.
research, 6 trips to the archives in Salt Lake, 2 major trips to Europe for research, countless other archives all across the country, and more money and time than my husband will ever be adequately told about.
Yeah.
But
okay.
I figured it all out, but it took 5 years, and,
wow.
and it was pretty exciting. But, you know, you learn a lot, and you use a lot of those relational skills, so building relationships with people in Europe that I needed to have help me do certain things that I physically just couldn't do. And that was all done before the internet was really this
mm-hmm.
fancy thing they have. And don't believe everything that's on the internet, folks. It's
what?
Not all true. It's
oh.
not all true. The sources of information all still need to be vetted.
You say that you make this quote, you have to take action to implement changes that will make you more viable to your prospective consumers. And you know, you've just talked about that, mm-hmm. and it makes so much sense. And I can tell that you really take that to heart. And so do we at Vincent Companies. That is, so that really resonated with me. I'm like, yeah, you've got to take this action. You've got to implement things. You can avoid them if you want. It's never going to really get you to the best place. You can sometimes you find yourself too close to a subject where you just can't see the things anymore. That might be as simple as, like you're talking earlier, maybe the paint in the carpet was just or in a place. You might not even see that. Your staff might not even see that anymore.
If there's a certain situational blindness that occurs.
Yes.
And
it's great term. See, this is why you're here, because
I need to write a book.
I was trying to come up with that term. There you go.
Well, but what happens is we're too close to it. I mean, mm-hmm. if you ask me things about my own business, there are certain things that I've got a blind spot to. And
sure.
and one of the things that for me as an outside advisor, I mean, I've been making my living doing consulting work for multiple decades, but it's really about, I come in and I see the market for what it really is. I see where my client fits as it really fits. I have no magical thinking involved. I am less concerned about who I piss off in a meeting because I actually tell them the truth.
Yeah.
And it's you know, like that thing with the YMCA on the corner of the property. It's a perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
The client did end up tearing down their commons building and rebuilding because the reality of them being repositioned as a mid-market building was they could not abide by that. They just couldn't let that stand. But it took the hard statement and the willingness to not shrink away from the truth of it. And I didn't say it to hurt people's feelings, but it was simply to help them understand their new reality, because I've never had a client yet where I haven't toured more of the competitors than anybody on staff.
Yeah.
So I actually know. We shop
That's
them.
Impressive.
We look at them. We study them. We, you know, it's more than just looking at their website. I mean, I like it when I can physically get in the building and have that feel. And we talk to people about how they're all perceived and where they fit and what they mean. And there is an energy that comes from that can't be replicated if you're just solely focusing on your internal operation.
Yes.
But I have a skill set that my clients truthfully don't need all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The boards need it. They need that candid advice so that they can make better decisions about where to deploy the limited resources that they have in their capital reserves, or what fundraising mm-hmm. they're going to need to do, or what retrofitting needs to be done. And that's the value add that I provide. And then I go away. So they don't have me as an ongoing mm-hmm. expense. It would be great if they did. But they don't need me all the time.
Yeah.
But what they do need, and I am not everybody's cup of tea. I totally, totally understand that. But I'm a truth teller.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to make things better than I encountered them as. And so for me, if I can help a provider do a better job to create a better experience, I'm touching tens of thousands of lives ultimately through the quality of the work that I do for a variety of people, tens of thousands of people whose jobs I've affected that will never know who I am, and whose living
right.
experiences and family experiences will be altered forever,
right.
but they will never know who I am. And when I understood that the impact of what I do as a management consultant transcends the client transaction,
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden it became a really important calling. And thus the book. I wrote the book so that people who don't, they may be experts in another industry sector, like some of your investors are, I'm sure, really savvy business people,
right.
but helping them to understand how these things correlate, so that they can take their business acumen and insight in a way that helps them elevate and understand, they're going to make better investment decisions, and they're going to be, if they're on a board, they're going to make, be a better board member, and if they're an executive in the industry, they're going to make better strategic choices long before the crisis hits the fan. Mm-hmm. And
crisis hits the fan. I heard a different saying than that. What is it?
Well, I was trying to keep this as PG as possible.
Well, let's wrap up and put a bow on part one of our multi-part series here, featuring and based on Jill Johnson's book, Market Forces, Strategic Trends Impacting Senior Living Providers. This has been phenomenal. I want to thank you, Jill, for joining us. And to the listeners, stick around because we are going to have the follow-up part to this coming out to you soon, but we really look forward to talking to you guys again soon. Take care. Learn more about Vincent Companies and the Trends with Benefits podcast at vincentre.com or trendswithbenefitspodcast.com. You can also give us a call at 612-424-8650 or submit questions at info@vincentre.com. And we really look forward to meeting you soon.